2 years ago, the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus and the Kalamazoo Philharmonia teamed up to finish their seasons together by performing a major work for voices and orchestra. It's happening again tomorrow night in Chenery Auditorium with a performance of A German Requiem by Johannes Brahms. This is WMUK's Let's Hear It. I'm Kara Lawrence. Glad you could come along tonight for more music of the moment in West Michigan. My guests are conductor of the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, Andrew Kohler, the director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, Jim Turner, and the executive director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival, Mary Lam Rodriguez. I asked Andrew to explain how the second collaboration came about.
This is something that we've wanted to do for a long time. You know, we had our first collaboration, these two organizations, 2 years ago. And, you know, it was kind of a funny story. At that time, our initial instinct was, let's do the Brahms Requiem. What a perfect piece. We must do the Brahms Requiem. But then it had floated through the ether that some other organizations in town might be presenting that same work. And we thought, well, let's be good bedfellows. You know, this is a complicated and an intricate performing arts scene in town. So let's find something else. And we did. And we did the Cherubini Requiem and Ravel's Daphnis and Chloe. And that was an incredible experience. I mean, we just had so much fun doing it, putting together these forces. And the Cherubini was really a wonderful discovery for us. It's not a piece that's very well known. But when we thought about doing a collaboration again, because the first one was so successful, we thought, well, now finally it's time for us to get to the thing that we had wanted to do all along, so to speak, the Brahms. And it's just, I mean, it's just one of those works that I think every musician must experience in his life. It's one of those seminal sort of central works of the canon, and it's just so intensely rewarding to get inside this text and inside this music.
Jim, do you have anything to add to the story here?
Well, one of the most exciting things about presenting the Requiem, Andrew is fluent in German, so we have a conductor that knows the language inside and out. And that was one of my concerns. I can pronounce German sometimes with a southern accent.
Bavarian.
but besides Andrew's knowledge of the language and making the decision we would do this in German and not in English, because Brahms did give the okay for this work to be done in English during his lifetime. But I've only performed it twice as a singer in German, and that was the direction I wanted to go. And so that was a decision that was pretty easy for us to come to. And then also John Fink, professor of mathematics at the college, is also fluent in German and sings in the Bach. And so every rehearsal, to have an expert in each rehearsal correcting German, was a huge tool for us that made presenting the work really feasible, because that I really was concerned about that, the length of time it would take to learn the Luther Bible text, which is a text many times is not familiar to most people in the sacred literature. So with Andrew's expertise in German and John Fink's, that was a reason for doing it in German.
You frequently do reference the talents and knowledge base of your own chorus when we talk here on the radio. I know that you often draw great experience from many of the singers.
Absolutely. We're so lucky to have really gifted singers, many of whom are faculty members at Kalamazoo College and Western Michigan University. Esther Gray is also a singer in the Bach Choir, and is in the English department at Western, I believe, now. And she's also not only fluent in German, but a German scholar. So she's been able to bring a lot of insights into the rehearsals as well.
Can influence at least people on either side of
That's right.
of her. So the German language, of course, was a consideration, but the choir is very experienced, not only with different languages, but with lengthy pieces.
Well, as Andrew mentioned last night in the rehearsal, by the way, our first rehearsal with the orchestra was in Chenery last night, which was an exceptional first rehearsal. We're all really excited about performing this on Saturday. Talking about during the rehearsal last night, sustaining vocal stamina and doing a work like this. This is the, of the works I know, I'm sure I'm going to misspeak here, but of the major choral orchestral works, It's the only one that I know of where the chorus is in every movement. So there is no vocal rest, or very little, really, in a work like this. So the choir has really got to be ready, not only obviously to sing in the language, but to sustain Brahms for 75 minutes, the really difficult vocal lines, is quite a feat. So we've been in training for this since January, getting ready for this performance. So
the concert this Saturday at 8 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium also does have two soloists performing.
Yes.
There's a soprano and a baritone. Would you tell me about these individuals?
Sure. It's Ria Olivace, who's our soprano soloist, and she's a sort of beloved figure in town.
A short time.
Yes, exactly.
Very short time.
Yeah, she's endeared herself very quickly, and rightfully so. I mean, she's just got I think she, if I'm correct, she's married to the soccer coach at K, and she just sort of stumbled in one day and said, "Could I sing for you?" And Jim heard her. We both did, and we thought, "Are you kidding? This is someone who lives in town.
This is the real deal."
Well, she stumbled in with a degree in voice from the University
of
Michigan.
I just mean that we had no preparation to know that what we were getting into hearing, and what an unbelievable surprise it was. She's, of course, fantastically well-trained, and is just a spectacular musical presence. So we're just delighted to have her. And then our baritone soloist is Anthony Clark Evans, and he is actually working with the Ryan Center at the Lyric Opera, which is launching the careers of young up-and-coming singers. So he is a less personally well-known presence to us, but an absolutely wonderful baritone voice, and we're really thrilled to have him.
Anthony Clark
Evans. Yes.
Anthony Clark Evans. What popped up on Google when I looked up his name was his backstory as a musician who got married during college, left school, and started selling cars.
That's right. Yeah, that's what it's in his bio. It's an amazing thing, right? He was a used car salesman or something like that, and then he won the Metropolitan Opera auditions. So another surprise, you know? We're all about surprising soloists who just show up and suddenly can sing wonderfully.
Well, he apparently has just a lot of great talent and a lot of natural charm, and I think you're really lucky to be working with the star on the rise as well.
Yeah, we certainly feel that way.
You were all together last night, or was it just the chorus?
We were all together, except for Anthony Clark, who was not able to join us last night, but will be there tonight.
Again, the concert is at 8 o'clock on Saturday night in Chenery Auditorium. It's the closing of the 2014-2015 Kalamazoo Bach Festival season, and full details are online at kalamazoobachfestival.org. Now, Andrew, before we just go all Brahms on this hour, we need to talk about the other work that you have programmed for Saturday.
Yeah, well, so the full title of the program is Heaven and Earth. And the reason I wanted to include that was to make a suggestion about the first piece, which is the Funeral March from Götterdämmerung by Wagner. This is the fourth opera in his epic Ring Cycle tetralogy. And Siegfried is the hero of the story. Really, he's the grandson of the gods, as it were. And he doesn't really appear till the third opera, and falls in love with Brunhilde, who's the matriarch of the Valkyries, these winged horse riding female warriors. And he's sort of betrayed in the last opera and killed rather unceremoniously. But his burial, the mourning at his passing, is quite ceremonious. And Wagner fashioned about an 8-minute funeral march, and it's for the orchestra alone. And it's just an absolutely stunning piece of music. And I really rather got taken by the idea of having a hero's burial begin the concert, and then having a requiem sung, in a sense, to that hero who's now buried. The other thing that was really exciting for me was the thought that traditionally when one talks about this era of music, one talks about a sort of war of the romantics between Brahms and Wagner. So Brahms was the one who felt very much attached to previous forms and wanted to continue writing in those, certainly with an updated idiom. I mean, he's a very clearly romantic composer in spirit, I think. But he always maintained, you know, he wrote symphonies still, concerti, pieces of chamber music and even something like this Requiem, which is in many senses unusual, but nonetheless harkens back to a lot of older precedents. Whereas Wagner sort of venerated all that, but thought that was merely a stepping stone for his new inventions of moving forward. So to have both of them very closely knit in the same program was something that I thought was an exciting juxtaposition. And it's also just music that I love.
Mm-hmm. It's a little problematic to cast these complicated individuals as enemies of some kind.
You're absolutely right. That was the discourse of the day and often is still today. But and honestly, the one who fueled it a little more was Wagner, who was, as many people know, not the most charitable of historical figures. But Brahms actually was very generous and admitted on several occasions that he admired, even if he didn't necessarily philosophically agree with, admired Wagner's achievement.
Johannes Brahms was born in Hamburg, 1833 or 1827, something like that.
I think it's 33, yeah.
33, to a musician father and a mother who was 17 years older than his father and a seamstress. And near the end of her life, she was basically abandoned by his father, and she died about a year later. And this is critical to his thinking and his writing of this German Requiem.
Yeah, absolutely. That the death of his mother had a profound influence on his life and certainly part of the inspiration for this work. And Andrew could probably speak to this better than I, but also many people believe that he was still lingering and grieving over the death of Schumann, that was such a close friend. So the death of his mother and Robert Schumann, most people agree, had quite an influence on his choosing the text that he did for this from the Luther Bible, and certainly a big part of the inspiration for his writing of this.
There's even some reason to suspect that Schumann had himself thought of an idea like this. He did write a Requiem, but also a non-Latin text. In other words, this German Requiem, one that would use the text of the Luther Bible in what was for them their native language. So in a way, this was another means of offering that homage towards the passing of Schumann, sort of completing what had potentially at least been his idea.
Now, if Johannes Brahms had been English, this would have been called an English Requiem. It's simply to distinguish the language used in the piece, not the Latin of the Catholic Mass. But
that's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, Requiem, right, is still in there. It's still in the title, and that is a Latin word, and it obviously is weighted with suggestion about historical precedents. And despite knowing all of those, very pointedly, Brahms chose to set this in German, and more to the point, did not not simply take what would have been the Latin texts and merely copy those parts into how they had been rendered in German, but rather completely chose his own texts from all over the Bible. I mean, you know, certain psalms here, certain the words of Christ in another spot. So, I mean, just things that really resonated, I think, in a way with him. Of course, there's this famous story where when he's first getting it premiered, he writes to a pastor in a Lutheran church, and it's going to be premiered in this church. And the pastor says to him, "You know, it's unusual, but you don't actually mention the name Jesus Christ. It's implied often throughout the text. Sometimes it's even Jesus' words, but you never actually say it. It seems if you really want to write a liturgical piece, you need to make more explicit what you suggest here." And Brahms demurred at that point and said that he was happy with the way he had chosen the text, and in fact suggested that in some ways it could be a universal requiem. The German does refer, of course, to the language used, but the spirit, I think, is, human.
For all humanity, I think.
Exactly.
Wie lieblich sind deine Wohnungen.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what that translates to.
Well, there's various translations. I think the King James Bible goes with, how lovely are thy tabernacles, or how lovely are your dwelling places.
Would you take us into this part of the Requiem?
I think it's one of the most beloved sections of the Requiem, and it's sort of a jewel in the heart of it. And it's, you know, one of the things that distinguishes this Requiem largely is that rather than worrying on the fire and brimstone that might happen if you don't live a sinless life or close to sinless life, it instead focuses on comfort for those who are mourning and comfort for those who have passed on, and a sense that when we pass on, that there will be beautiful things that await us. And this movement focuses on that last idea.
A reminder to listeners that the Kalamazoo Philharmonia and the Bach Festival Chorus, prepared by James Turner, will be performed on Saturday at 8 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium in a concert featuring Rhea Olivace and Anthony Clark Evans, soprano and baritone soloists. Details and ticket information available at kalamazoobachfestival.org. Here's music from that fourth movement. We heard the fourth movement of A German Requiem by Johannes Brahms, one of the most important pieces in his catalog, and a piece that can only come together with hundreds of people participating, and two great directors, Jim Turner, the director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, and the director of the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, Andrew Kohler. Let's continue our discussion of A German Requiem by Johannes Brahms. I believe it came out 10 years before he produced that first symphony.
Exactly right, yeah. This was one of his first big works. It was really the work that made his name. You know, initially he had gotten a lot of good press, but the sense was that he hadn't yet earned it, and that good press had come from his friend Schumann, whom we've already mentioned, who was a pretty influential music critic and had already written about Brahms and said, this guy is going to be the savior of music. I mean, talk about a burden to put on. I mean, it was a very nice burden, but what a burden to place on someone's shoulders. So he really felt that this would be the spiritual heir to Beethoven that would take music forward into the Romantic era and both venerate the past and create the great music of the future. And as you can imagine, that was a very difficult thing to live with. So Brahms really hesitated for a long time. And he had written shorter works that were relatively well received, but this was the first real major work that I think got the attention of you know, the intelligentsia in Europe and sort of made them think, okay, well, maybe Schumann was right after all. This guy really is able to deliver something of this profundity and this beauty, and truly does seamlessly bridge, I think, the traditions of the past with the personal voice of the Romantic era.
Now, I think, Andrew, you and I might be like a little more familiar with just the orchestral pieces, the piano pieces, the chamber music, the string quartets, but Jim might be the one here to talk about specifically his choral compositions, which were a very important part of his life. What do you understand through your experience preparing Brahms' choral works?
Well, one of the things we talked about as we began this musical journey of trying to learn this work was I've taught many Brahms songs, the Lieder of Brahms, and of course, those songs are, you know, are part of the major part of the classical singer's repertoire, singing Brahms songs. But there are very few Brahms songs, actually, that have, in one phrase, covering a range of an octave and a fifth.
Seems like a lot to ask.
So that's a lot to ask of a singer, especially a choral singer. And many of the movements, in, especially some of the big fugues in number six and number three, the singers are required to negotiate, in one phrase, a range of an octave and a fifth, which is unusual. So the vocal demands of the Requiem, not just the range of some of the lines the singers have to deliver, but also sustaining a high tessitura for long periods of time, many measures, where sopranos especially are floating along up on high G's and high A's, and with a diminuendo at the end of a, 14,000 beats, takes a lot of vocal control that really is not required in some of the most difficult Brahms songs that I've taught. So within the work itself, even for comparing, as I said, to some of the songs of Brahms, it's quite demanding.
Did he have the world's best choir at his disposal at the time, or is he just pushing? He just wants it to happen.
I think he's pushing, but he's also, in many ways, referencing a historical precedent there, which is that Lieder were historically, these songs were historically intended for amateur singers and therefore had a more constrained range, whereas these great sacred works would have been thought of for a choir that was probably at least semi-professional, you know, that would have had...
And 200 or more.
Right.
People.
Which makes a difference, too, when you have that many people sharing the responsibility of singing some of these long lines in the Brahms.
Did we say how big the choir is for Saturday?
78 strong we have. We're really lucky. We were just speaking about this. We're so very lucky to have the acoustics of Chinnery to help us and the design, the acoustical shell design of that space. And very well-trained, mature singers, as we like to call ourselves. So it's working quite well. We're really, really fortunate that we have the orchestra, of course, with Andrew's leadership, and being sensitive to the needs of singers, which orchestral conductors aren't always in that same ballpark with choral and vocal people. But
you
Andrew
trained me well,
definitely
Jim,
is.
You do have to have... You must feel a lot of empathy for the singers, even though you're orchestral conducting, but, you know, it's your job to take care of them, too.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. I mean, one can't forget that that it's easy to overlook if you're, you were saying earlier, you might feel as an instrumentalist a little more comfortable with wordless music, the symphonies of Brahms or something like that. You know, it's easy to overlook that this is the text here is a crucial component. And of course, there's only one kind of performer on stage carrying that that aspect of the music, and they have to have the chance, and they have worked so hard and are doing so beautifully, they have to have that chance to be able to get that text out, and that's an important part of the emotional impact of a work like this.
I do think that one of the great advantages of the Kalamazoo Philharmonia and the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus is that you have time. This music has been part of your rehearsals and lives and people's off time and on time since January, February?
The Bach Choir started working on this in January, knowing that we were going to have some snow days. and that, you know, in Michigan in January, February, March, April, May, people get sick. But especially in the really cold winters we've had the last two winters. So we anticipated that and thought it was necessary to do that. In fact, several singers last night thanked me for beginning this process when we did. And at first were complaining about the length of time we'd be rehearsing this work. But they all feel like, and I feel like, it's the best prepared Bach choir in the 20 years I've been doing this here with Bach Festival ever. And they are so thrilled that they've had the time, as you said, to work this magnificent work into their voices, so they really feel like they know it inside and out.
And it really shows. It's a wonderful thing, because last night I was feeling often there were a few moments where I thought, oh, I could have done more. I could have given a clearer cue. I could have helped that section come in. And inevitably, they were just there. They just know it. They don't. They're just. It's so a part of them now that it's a beautiful thing to behold.
In rehearsals, up until now, of course, the orchestra has been played by a rehearsal pianist,
Carl Witt. Many people in this area know Carl, and he's just a fantastic musician, accompanist, composer, and he really has been able to bring the orchestral reduction to the piano, and that's had a major, I think, impact on the choir feeling comfortable for the first time walking in and singing with the orchestra last night. We've just been well accompanied by Carl helping us get ready for this.
And given that Carl was actually the composer whose new work was premiered on the Philharmonia's last concert, and he performed it with us, he knows the orchestra particularly well, so he really... I can't think of any other figure who would so intimately understand both organizations and be able to shuttle between them.
Would you take us into this sixth movement I think we picked out?
Yes. So this is an example of one of the larger movements in the Brahms, perhaps in contrast to the fourth movement that we listened to earlier. The fourth movement and other of the shorter, smaller movements often have a structure where the beginning material will come back again at the end. These larger movements are more, I suppose, like evolving bits of music. And so we have various ideas. We began with the idea that we have no permanent dwelling place. That's a text, the idea of impermanence on earth. And amazingly, Brahms, who's a very subtle text setter, basically starts the movement not in the home key. It's sort of floating on another in another key. So it gives it that feeling of instability that sort of hits home the idea that we have no permanent dwelling place. Then the text shifts in a way, a kind of questioning, and it moves to, I guess what we might say is the closest thing to Brahms trying a Dies Irae, which is the wrath of God, a very famous part of the Latin Requiem. It's not quite that same idea, but it's the idea that death does not have triumph over us, but it's set in a very willful, very kind of fist-shaking at the heavens sort of way. And then finally, this all resolves itself in a great fugue at the end that the Lord is worthy and worthy of our praise. And that's the sort of evolution of thought and text. And you'll listeners will hear three discrete portions of this movement.
This is just part of a major work in the classical canon, Brahms' German Requiem. It will be performed in full on Saturday at 8 o'clock at Chenery Auditorium, featuring the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, the Bach Festival Chorus, soprano Rhea Olivace, and baritone Anthony Clark Evans. Details are available at KalamazooBachFestival.org. The penultimate movement of Brahms' A German Requiem, and a live performance is set for Saturday at 8 p.m. in Chenery Auditorium, bringing together the Bach Festival Chorus, prepared by James Turner, and the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, which is going to be directed by Andrew Kohler. Both are here today as my guests. along with Executive Director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival, Mary Lam Rodriguez. And Mary, it's been a terrific season. This is a great finale to the Bach Festival season.
It is, as well as the finale for the Kalamazoo Philharmonia as well. So with both of us, Kalamazoo College organizations, ending our seasons together is very, very apropos. So also I wanted to mention at 7 o'clock prior to the concerts, Dr. Zaid Pixley, who is a professor at Kalamazoo College, will be doing a pre-concert lecture or talk. And we'll be having this lecture in the corner reception room in, off the lobby at Chenery Auditorium. It's a nice intimate space there, and we'll be able to gather beforehand to learn more about the Brahms. Yes, I think it'll be a great opportunity for people, if they didn't quite catch all of this interview, for them to learn more about this wonderful work.
I did want to make a mention here that, Mary, you are leaving this organization. You're moving to the other side of the state. I wanted to say personally that having known you since the late 90s at least, you've made my job so much easier, and yet you've taught me through example how to be better at what I do. Just you're one of the finest people I've ever worked with, and I don't think you're replaceable, but it has really been my honor to have you as my friend and someone to work with over many years and many concerts together.
Well, and likewise, Kara. I mean, you're going to make me cry now. Fortunately, it's over the air, so you can't see me. But yes, it's been really wonderful to be a part of this Kalamazoo community for 18 years now. And it's just, it's been a wonderful, wonderful time for us here, and very bittersweet. But Lansing is not that far away, so...
It's too far away.
I think Jim feels this pretty powerfully as well.
Well, it's one thing to have someone who's so qualified in every possible imaginable way as Mary, but also to be, as you said, to be able to count her as one of my friends has been a wonderful, wonderful blessing in my life. So we're going to miss her in so many ways.
It's so rare to find that person who is happiest when other people are achieving great art and is there to make it all happen for these other people who get a lot more of the glory and, you know, have their names in the paper and their voices on the radio. You take satisfaction from seeing that happen, and just one of the very best out there.
Oh, thank you, Kara. That's very nice.
Okay, well, so that's a small side trip here, but I did want to acknowledge Mary Lam Rodriguez, and I wish you all the best in Lansing. We'll see you lots more of you, I hope.
For sure, yeah. Yes.
So let's remind folks that Heaven and Earth, featuring Brahms' A German Requiem, is set for Saturday at 8 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. Last thoughts, Andrew Kohler.
Well, I think end today, maybe listening to a little bit of music from the last movement. And I think that last movement is music that in a lot of ways sums up the overall impression that the Requiem gives. And that, again, to bring it back, is about comfort for the living. So this last movement has a parallel with the first movement. There's similar music in it, and both have a text setting that is a kind of parallel construction. In the first movement, we have Selig sind die da Leid tragen, blessed are those who mourn. In the last movement, we have blessed are those who have died. And we see that on both sides of the divide between heaven and earth, people can take their faith with them and have a comfort in that faith. And it's, I just think a profoundly moving sentiment, and one of the reasons that Brahms really makes good on this idea that he is writing a human requiem, something that I think can touch any individual, because every one of us shares these fears and shares these worries and shares that profound need to find comfort, whether it's in one's mother's arms or just in the faith that there will be something and that we will be cared for in this life and beyond.
Mary mentioned at the beginning of this hour that there are several dozen tickets left, but there may be fewer than that at this point. You can find full details on tickets for this event at KalamazooBachFestival.org. Final thoughts, Jim?
We are so excited about presenting this work, Mary and Andrew and myself and both organizations, and we appreciate your inviting us here today to talk about this magnificent work, and we just look forward to seeing people Saturday night.
The Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus and the Kalamazoo Philharmonia close their seasons together tomorrow night at 8 o'clock in Chenery Auditorium. Zaid Pixley will offer a pre-concert talk at 7 p.m. Details at KalamazooBachFestival.org. Thanks to Jim Turner, the director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, and Andrew Kohler, music director of the Kalamazoo Philharmonia, as well as Mary Lam Rodriguez, the outgoing executive director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival. I'm Kara Lawrence. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for tuning in to WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan.